The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Brackets, brackets, brackets. March is here and Marquette is in it. Hello, everyone. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here, both giddy to talk brackets with you. Phil, we have a meaningful game to talk about in March, and I know it's a tough matchup, but I am looking forward to it. How are you feeling now that the bracket is out?
Well, I've got 24 hours to come back to reality, but right now I feel like is this what being high feels like? Because I'm pretty excited.
So, yeah, today's show, we're just going to talk about the Marquette's region. We might touch on the Big East tournament, what happened there a little bit, but I know everyone is talking brackets, giddy about brackets, looking forward to the matchup, and we'll give some, some predictions later in the show on what we think Marquette can do in this tournament and maybe who we think is going to win the whole dang thing. And at the very end, we're going to have a little fun because, as many of you may or may not know, I live in Fort Worth, Texas. So I am very excited that Marquette is coming to my town. So I'll talk about Fort Worth a little bit at the end of the show for any of you who may be making the trip. I hope many of you meet me here and hit me up on Twitter. Let me know if you're coming to town. Well, I'm sure there'll be a meetup of some sort. But Phil, I'm sure as many of you are aware by now, Marquette is going to be the number 9 seed in the East region. They're going to be playing in Fort Worth. They've got North Carolina in the first round. The winner of that game is going to play almost certainly Baylor, who is the 1 seed in that region, who plays Norfolk State in the first round. Phil, I believe it was the last podcast we were in referencing Alan Bukowski's article on CrackSidewalks.com about dreams and nightmares for Marquette. And North Carolina kind of fell under the category of nightmares, a team that Marquette would not want to play because they do have some talented big guys. And North Carolina has been playing very well as of late, really since mid-February. It's largely, looking at their front court, it's Brady Manick, who is the transfer from Oklahoma, has had a good year for them, and Armando Bacot, who, when he enrolled at North Carolina, a lot of people thought he would be a one-and-done type player, but he's now in his junior season. And North Carolina is the number 2 defensive rebounding team in the country on KenPom, so that's a big concern. Pretty good on the offensive boards, too, at least better than Marquette, but
Everybody is.
That's not saying much, but they're 103 in the country on offensive reboundings. So maybe not elite, but again, better than what Marquette is bringing to the table in that regard. What jumps out to you, Phil, in a Marquette North Carolina matchup?
I think the pace kind of jumps out to me. I think it's not a North Carolina that we're used to, right, so to speak. I mean, I don't know that we've been, as a fan base, have been paying attention to North Carolina this year, other than, hey, is Dawson Garcia playing? Which, noted for the record, I don't believe he will be because he's
still dealing. For those of you who have only been casually paying attention to North Carolina this year, Dawson Garcia is not with the team. He left. There's like a family situation he posted on social media a few weeks back. I guess his dad was really, really sick with COVID, and so he is with his family, and I do not believe he is returning. He's been gone for the last few months, so I'd be surprised if he came back all of a sudden before the tournament. I think he was done for the season just to be with his family. So if you were wondering about that, Dawson Garcia, as far as I know, will not be at this game for North Carolina.
Correct. But I think, again, further, like North Carolina, we're used to a fast pace, fast break type offense, and that's not really North Carolina's style this year under Hubert Davis. So I'm curious to see the dichotomy of the styles and how that plays out. I think the takeaway on the rebounding side of things is if Marquette misses a shot, they're not getting the rebound. Like that's about the only conclusion I can reach is that, if we put up shots and they don't go in, North Carolina is going to get the ball and go the other way.
I get, again, if you were just casually paying attention to North Carolina this year, you would feel like this is a down year for North Carolina. Them being an 8 seed maybe does spell down for them. But, you look at their losses, the teams they lost to, almost all of them are fine losses, like nothing to be ashamed of. They lost to Purdue and Tennessee in the non-con. Those, they're both top three seeds. They lost to Kentucky. That's a two seed. Lost to Notre Dame at Notre Dame. Maybe that's not a great loss. And they had a little bit of a funk there. They lost to Miami, who was a bubble team. They got in. Wake Forest was a bubble team. They did not get in. So those were where they lost three out of five there. And then after that, they lost to Duke. And then they got, of course, they famously beat Coach K in the regular season finale. Their only really stinker of a loss was on February 16th, where they lost to Pitt at home. They lost by double digits to Virginia Tech in the ACC tournament, who, of course, Vitek went on to win the ACC tournament. Vitek's playing really well right now. So, you know, maybe this idea that if you think this is like a wounded, weak North Carolina team is probably not accurate, especially because they've been playing really well since that loss to Pitt. I mean, they had won 6 in a row going into that Virginia Tech game that knocked them out of the ACC tournament. So North Carolina is kind of hot right now. So I think they've kind of found their groove after maybe they rethought some rotations after Dawson Garcia left the team. They've got good guards. You know, R.J. Davis was a very highly recruited guy. I know Wojo was hot after him. There was maybe a while there we thought we would get R.J. Davis at Marquette. Very good shooting guard. Caleb Love was a five-star prospect. And, Leaky Black seems like he's been there forever. So they have a deep team. They have an experienced team. It is a tough matchup, but the thing that I just can't get around, Phil, is the rebounding with Baycott, who is just a load down low. Again, that's another five-star prospect. He's 6'10", 240. He's a junior. One of the better rebounders in the country. Defensive rebounding percentage, he's 8th in the nation. Offensive rebounding percentage, he's 36th in the nation if you're breaking on individually. So Baycott is the guy who really, really worries me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's going to be – I don't know that we have anyone to throw at him. I think North Carolina shoots the ball from three well enough. I don't think they're like lights out ridiculous, but I think to try and slow down Baycott, we're gonna have to throw some doubles, front him, stuff like that. That's gonna really kind of pressure our weak side help defense. Which may result in some North Carolina's threes that we might otherwise not want to take, take. So, I mean, it's going to come down to, I think, to a certain extent, can you minimize the damage Baycott does? And, you know, can North Carolina shoot below average or just about average from three for Marquette to really have a solid chance in this game? I'm not saying they don't have a good chance. I'm just saying, you know, if North Carolina plays at or above the level it's played in the last month, I think there's some trouble for the good guys.
Yeah, for what it's worth, KenPom has this as a 2-point spread in North Carolina's favor. You mentioned the 3-point shooting, and that reminded me of something I was thinking of as I watched the Marquette Creighton game in the Big East tournament last week, Phil. I think something that may happen when teams scout Marquette and they go into the game is they know Marquette cannot rebound. And right, for that reason, maybe their shooters are a little more bold in their 3-point shots because they're thinking, one, maybe I'll hit this, but two, even if I don't, my guy's probably going to get the offensive rebound. It's going to work like a pass. So sometimes we've seen teams just chuck up a lot of threes that just go in and it frustrates us. But I do wonder sometimes if teams are chucking up threes, bolder threes against Marquette because the odds are greater that they will get an offensive rebound and get a 2-point putback.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, they're thinking, hey, there are almost no negative consequences to taking this shot, right?
Right, because, you know, I got a 30-something percent chance it's going in, but if not, I got a good chance, much higher than normal, that my guy's going to get a rebound and put it back. I mean, that Creighton game, watching Kalkbrenner, it seemed like he had 100 rebounds. I think he ended up with like 10, but it seemed like he got every rebound. And I know it's kind of a broken record at this point talking about Marquette's rebounding, and when Marquette is eventually knocked out of this tournament, I'm sure it will be rebounds that we're shaking our head about.
Whoa. Nobody said anything about them losing in this tournament. Come on now.
Yeah, I suppose the national championship is still on the table. It is. But when it ends, I am assuming whoever knocks them out, whether it's Carolina or Baylor or somebody later, it's going to be a rebounding issue that is going to knock Marquette out. And it, like, yeah, just big physical big guys just dominate Kerr and Oso and Omax or Jay Lewis, whoever is down there. And it's just something I'm like not even like upset about anymore. It's just something I just have to accept at this point that we just have to play our way around that and hope we get enough turnovers to win a game.
Right. Well, yeah, I agree. And I mean, so Marquette's a 9 seed because they've struggled against top teams, right? So that no one said this game would or could or should be easy. So it's certainly going to be tough. I guess the question, what is the scenario you see for Marquette being able to beat North Carolina? Like what does, you know, instead of reacting to North Carolina's, you know, obvious advantages, what does Marquette have that North Carolina has to react to?
Well, I'd say some of the more frustrating losses lately, Marquette, in addition to not rebounding, has turned the ball over quite a bit. That is one area where North Carolina is weak, is forcing turnovers. So maybe Marquette is able to take care of the ball a little more. Maybe Tyler Kolek is able to create more space because they're not pressuring him as much. And as a result, maybe you're able to get a few more open looks. Marquette has still been shooting the ball pretty well. Overall for the season, you know, they're up to 34% for the year. It's a stat that doesn't seem to match the eye test, but they were number two in the Big East in 3-point shooting percentage. So when they're getting open looks, they're still a good 3-point shooting team. So my hope is a lack of turnovers by Marquette's offense, because North Carolina is not great at forcing them, leads to space created by Marquette's guards, particularly Kolek. And when Kolek is able to create space, get into the paint, and you know, maybe draw a defender away and throw a lob up to Kerr or Oso, you know, those easy buckets, you know, when Marquette was really rolling, that's what was happening a lot, right? Was Kolek creating a little bit of chaos and either throwing an easy lob to one of the big guys who got either a dunk or an easy layup, or wide open threes. You know, the frustrating thing for the first month of the season was contested threes. They've stopped that, which has been good, and that's why the 3-point shooting has gone up overall for Marquette as the season's gone along. But the rebounding has continued to be a problem more and more and more, and the turnovers in some of their uglier losses have also been frustrating. So my hope is that Carolina does not suddenly ratchet up the pressure and start forcing turn, or Marquette just unforced errors starts kicking it around. You know, young guys in a big game, that scares me too. So that's one area where maybe I would be a little hopeful that maybe Marquette's offense gets some rhythm against a UNC defense that doesn't pressure quite as much.
Yeah, I think Marquette could get comfortable in this game a little bit, right? Like you said, Marquette's not going to isn't going to commit a lot of turnovers in this game, because that's not what North Carolina does. But two, just kind of living in the moment, right? And again, North Carolina is not pressuring in the half court or the full court. So if Marquette can just get in there, get their legs under them, you know, I think North Carolina's offense is fine, but it's not lights out. So if Marquette can play with violence on the defensive end and turn that into offense, there's a path to success. But it's going to really come down to, does this team play like the team in January, or does this team play like the team that's essentially played February and March to date, right? Like with maybe one or two exceptions. You know,
and I'm also kind of curious how the crowd's going to be, because obviously North Carolina is a huge national brand. I'm sure they've got thousands of alumni just in Dallas-Fort Worth alone who are going to be there. And I'm sure they're going to travel well because it's UNC. But obviously our game is the second game of the first session in Fort Worth. So Baylor would have played before us, presumably would have won. So will the Baylor fans sticking around, would they the thing is, it's not like it would be a huge upset. So it's not like they would be watching like a 4 play a 13 or something where they would just get behind the big underdog. But would Baylor cheer against the big brand, or would they just not care? Like, if Marquette made a run, would the Baylor fans get behind Marquette at all? Because I don't know what that would be like. But it's certainly not a bold prediction that North Carolina fans are going to heavily outweigh Marquette fans. I know we'll have one.
Yeah.
I know we'll have one there, but we'll see how many Marquette fans are in the building. But I'm curious if the crowd is going to be a factor at all.
Yeah, I don't know. That's going to be interesting, right? Like, I've not really – well, and quite frankly, it's been – and this is the crazy thing. It's been 3 years, over 3 years, since we've had to pay attention to some of these games, right? You know, and before anyone who's toxically positive comes after me, yes, in 2020, Marquette would have gone to the NCAA tournament, but they did not because of COVID. So, okay, right. But 2021, there were no fans, right? And so now it's 2022, and Marquette's back into a game, and like, what is the crowd like, right? That, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be people that are just going to be overjoyed at being somewhere in public with a bunch of people, right? Like, yeah. it'll be a little riotous.
Yeah, Dickey's Arena is, you know, it's in Fort Worth. It's kind of like a mini American Airlines Center, if you're familiar with Dallas Mavericks Arena. It's designed the exact same. It's like if they had to rebuild the American Airlines Center with like 90% of the budget, you would have Dickey's Arena. It's just like a little bit smaller, not as quite as many fancy like Jumbotron type things, but other than that, it's designed exactly like the Mavs Arena. But it's a nice arena. I've been in it a few times for high school basketball, and it's, you know, it's clean. It, and, you know, got great sight lines. There's not really a bad seat in the place, so it's a great place to watch a basketball game for sure.
Oh well, that's good. Then everyone should have a good time when they're there, right?
They should, and I definitely will.
Yes,
I definitely will.
But yeah, it's going to be we're a 9 seed for a reason, right? Like,
See, that's the thing that when I'm trying to be optimistic, let's not beat around the bush here. You know, Marquette's leaking oil, right?
Yep.
Like, they are struggling down the stretch. We can make an excuse here, an excuse there, say maybe they're going to snap out of it. The fact is, Marquette is playing just a touch below 500 basketball since the last week of January. You know, they have some nice, they had that one great win over Villanova in that time. You know, their wins in that time are Georgetown, blah, Butler at home, but they went and lost at Butler too, and then they beat St. John's at home. Then, you know, any kind of challenging opponent in that time, they've lost in sometimes quite ugly fashion. So the thing we want to try to talk ourselves into, Phil, is that new tournament, maybe new life, new arena, something outside the Big East. Maybe they snap out of whatever kind of funk's been going on. Convince me of that.
I've been prepping all evening for this very conversation where I say, well, Joe, here's why Marquette is definitely going to win. Here's the thing. Like the best I can come up, and I don't want this to sound like I'm being negative or I think Marquette's going to lose, but like the best that I can come up with is Marquette is not going to be playing Big East foes that are used to playing against Marquette, right? Like we're playing new blood, new teams. You know, they're not used to our tendencies and, you know, they're going to have a limited amount of time to watch game film, etc. I think that's what makes the difference. I really think we win this game because we kind of revert back to a more normal shooting. I mean, Greg Elliott, as an example, is shooting 39% on the year, but is like 1-for-10 in his last threes and is something ridiculous like 12-for-37 or 38 for the month of February and March, right? Like it's just the shooting has kind of fallen off. And so we're getting the open looks on offense, but it's not translating into made buckets right now. And maybe, you know, a new arena, a new season, so to speak, maybe that changes. But I can't point to something like tangible, like, hey, look, they are going to rebound, you know, Marquette's going to rebound the crap out of the ball, and that's going to be the difference. I can't find
that. I promise that will not happen.
Yes.
Like, Like, if Marquette snatches, like, a high percentage of offensive rebounds, I would fall on the floor laughing. It would be so unexpected. But, yeah, I think that is – if there's a path to victory, I think that's it. Yeah, just the shooting comes around that just hasn't been there. And, you know, we're so late in the season, you know, I don't see, like, any kind of drastic shifts in rotations or playing time for guys who maybe haven't played as much, right? Like, I'm sure some people wonder, will we see more of Stevie Mitchell, right? Because he's played well down the stretch, Stevie has. But is Shaka going to drastically shake up his rotation just because of that? Like, I wouldn't mind seeing more Stevie Mitchell, but is that something the coaching staff would be comfortable doing, is changing something like that this late in the season? If they think it's the right move, think it's the right move. But, you know, I agree with you. I hope Greg gets his shots and Greg's shooting comes around. But maybe if he's struggling, or maybe it is time for a little more Stevie Mitchell.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater and change everything, because it, you know, certainly for the month of January and even in the non-conference season, the kind of the strings that Coach Smart pulled certainly made an impact. But I just struggle with the rotation late. Now, it's interesting that, you know, Marquette's bench is relatively short already. Do you shorten it further is kind of the question I struggle with, because I think we've got six players, maybe five and a half players that we can really count on, right? Like, I think it's
– Yeah, like – specifically, because, you know, Shaka has given some nice early minutes to David Joplin and in recent games, and he's, you know, played well offensively in spurts, but also gotten beaten defensively.
Right.
Cam Jones has been hot and cold, maybe more cold lately in the season. How short is his leash coming off the bench? So yeah, like I do think a lot of, you see that with a lot of coaches, like, when it comes to a tight game, when it comes to a big game, there are just only so many guys they trust, right? Even if they've been rotating nine guys all year, suddenly that gets down to seven when it comes down to crunch time. Will Shaka do that? I don't know. But I would hope it, you know, Joplin and Cam would get maybe some kind of minutes and see if they give some kind of spark. But on the other hand, if your starting five is rocking and rolling, keep going with it, right?
Right.
You know, and, you know, you take guys out when they need a break or whatever. But, that is a good question. I don't know what the answer would be or what I would even want to see. I would hope that the guys who have gotten opportunities most of the year would still get those opportunities. And if they give you a spark, great. If not, go with the guys you feel better about.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think you're going to start, because – you know, I think North Carolina is a little bit more of a big man team than we've played most of the season, right? They're less finesse. They're a little more, you know, just kind of, they run the three big set across the front.
Because you got Leaky Black at 6'8", Brady Manick 6'9", and Armando Baycott 6'10".
Right. Which, you know, so are we going to play, you know, some combination of 2K or Oso plus Justin Lewis plus Omax? I don't really see that, but then does that mean you've got the likes of Daryl Morcell trying to guard Leaky Black? Like, I mean, maybe, you know? So I don't know. It's really going to come down to, how do we think we can defend what North Carolina does while still maximizing our offensive output? Because I'm sure there's a lineup we can put together defensively that will limit the damage from North Carolina. But I'm also very, very confident that defensive-minded lineup is not getting a lot of buckets.
Right. And, you know, something Paint Touches had pointed out, North Carolina is outstanding in transition offense, and Marquette has struggled quite a bit in transition defense lately. So that is also a concern. That's where I am concerned that the game could get away from Marquette quickly. If Marquette starts cold from the floor, like, you know, 0 for their first five shots or something, or they just go on a stretch where they go 2 or 3 minutes without making a bucket, and North Carolina goes down the other end and gets easy layups. You know, their guards are beating our guards down the other end. Or, you know, that's where, like, a 10-0 run could happen really quickly. And that would be a concern of mine. So, you know, you've got to tell the bigs, you've got to beat Manick and Baycott down the floor every time. You just have to. Like, you know, I don't think that's asking a lot.
Right.
You know, Manic is frustrating and he's sneaky, but you've got to beat him down the floor. Just and if you get tired, well, we got guys on the bench to help you out. So, you know, right? So you got to beat those big guys down the floor, and just, you know, the best way to slow down a good transition offense is to not turn it over and to make shots, right?
Right.
Hit a
shot. Make them take it out from under the bucket every time.
Exactly. That it's easy to say, make shots, but it just comes down to that. Marquette's got to be clicking on offense. And if they're not, I could honestly see a scenario where this gets really ugly really quick. Like,
yeah.
But we're second half, we're turning it off. Like, but I hope it doesn't come to that, because I'm hoping Marquette's offense maybe comes alive a little bit here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's the number one concern I have, is that this has the ability to turn in, you know, and I can list them off right over the last 20 years. The game against Michigan State when Jarrell McNeil was banged up. You know,
that's a game where Marquette famously did not make a 2-point shot in the first half.
Correct.
All of their points were either threes or free throws.
Correct. You know, you've got obviously the Final Four game against Kansas. Like, there's at least a half a dozen games we've seen where Marquette has just been outclassed big and early. And that's a little frustrating. So that, I think that's the biggest concern I have, is that this is a game that could turn into that if Marquette does not manage the transition D effectively, right? Like, I don't want to say you want to give up on rebounding, but like, North Carolina is so good at it just normally, and Marquette is so bad at it just normally. I don't know that putting extra emphasis to try and rebound just a little bit better is going to be worth the runouts that we risk if we don't just crash five guys back, right? Like, I almost think you concede the defensive rebounds and get back.
I can almost get behind that logic. Try to stop them on that end as opposed to preventing the break, basically what you're saying.
Right, right. Just get back so the break doesn't happen and force them into the half court.
Yeah, I could see it. We'll see how Marquette attacks. And that would be just a, you know, deflating if it does get away from Marquette that early, but hopefully it doesn't come to that. But I could see a path to how it could happen.
Yes.
Is all I'm saying.
Yes.
But
and this is turning into a depressing podcast, but I mean, like, the reality is that this is that I think
it's... Yeah, I mean, the fact is, it's a hot team in North Carolina taking on a team, like I said, is leaking oil right now.
Right.
But crazier things have happened in March. There have been teams much worse than this Marquette team that have won one game or two games in the tournament, right?
Right.
There, plenty of strange things happen in this tournament. I would love to be one of those strange things in a good way, and for Marquette to win a game or more. So, well, who knows? And, you know, I don't want to get into Baylor too much because we're focused on Carolina, and that would be a monumental thing just to beat Carolina. But I will say this, Phil. If Marquette has to be paired with a one seed, I guess Baylor, the team that's missing a couple, at least one, maybe two players, is, even though they've played pretty well without the big guy, you know, and then L.J. Cryer, he's probably not going to play. Chamu Chachua, that's the Baylor guy that I'm trying to think of. They've played well without him, but again, I want no part of Gonzaga, I want no part of Arizona, and I want no part of Kansas. So
Baylor,
by process of elimination...
Yeah, Baylor, yeah. It is.
Yeah, so by process of elimination, if Marquette had to be paired with a one seed, fine, Baylor.
Right, right. Well, here's the good news. Once you get past Baylor, it gets easier.
yeah. I suppose it would.
We could face UCLA again. That would be fun.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go last time?
Not great. Not great, Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I'm still firmly on team. Let's just win one game. Like,
I
just,
am too.
Get the monkey off the back.
Yeah, and if Marquette gets the one, everything else is absolute gravy.
Right.
Just total freaking gravy. Just anything. I would gladly sit through a 30-point beatdown to Baylor on Saturday if it means we beat Carolina on Thursday.
Right. Absolutely.
I would just go, just be pounding beers there in Dickey's Arena saying, well, we won Thursday. That was cool. That would be me.
Well, here's the question I have for you. So let's assume, and this is a bit unfair because one of the matchups can't work, but let's assume Marquette stayed a 9. Which other bracket would you want to put Marquette in? You can't put him in the South because Seton Hall's an 8 there. But
okay, then I would have to say just by process of elimination. I we also couldn't go over to.
We would replace Creighton.
We'd replace Creighton. But, you know, Boise State would have been a good matchup for Marquette.
Yes.
So to swap with Memphis, now, downside is that you're getting beat down by Gonzaga in the next game. But if the priority is just winning one, I would rather face Boise State than North Carolina.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'd rather face Seton Hall, Boise State, or San Diego State. I mean, but this is kind of why the committee exists, right? They make matchups that are interesting because they could have put us on any one of those other lines. And I think Marquette is probably favored in all of those.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not San Diego State, but you know what I mean? Like that's the thing is they put Marquette on in the 8-9 game where the 9 seed is not favored over the 8 seed.
Yeah. I was, so obviously I'm watching the selection show on Sunday and, you know, I know what all the bracketologists say, both Alan, our own bracketologist at Crack Sidewalks, and then all the others. It was pretty much a consensus. Marquette is 9 or 10, right? I didn't see very many people at all having Marquette in 8 or worse than a 10. So that first pod comes up. I'm like, not Gonzaga, not Gonzaga, not Gonzaga. And then Boise State flips over. I'm like, well, maybe I'd be okay at this 9 spot just to get one. And then Memphis flips over and... All right, well, and then, you know, go region again and a region again. Then there's one region left. And, like, some people are freaking out, like, oh, did Marquette get left out? I'm like, no, they didn't get left out. So I'm looking at it like, there's only 2 spots left. I'm like, either we're a 9 here in Fort Worth or they put us at a 10 and we're going to go to Indianapolis and play Kentucky. Or play somebody before
and then
playing Kentucky.
Yeah.
Right. So, and then... You know, flipped over. I'm like, yes. I started texting people. People started tagging me on Twitter. So, yeah, again, selfishly, I obviously wanted Marquette to be in Fort Worth because I wanted to see them. It would have been great to be somewhere else, but Marquette needed to win more games to be somewhere else, be somewhere better. Like, Marquette did not play well enough to earn a 7 or 6 seed. So, I mean, this honestly is about as good as Marquette could have hoped for. The only other spot as the selection show was going around that I thought, oh, this would be a great spot for Marquette, was when, you know, it showed Greensboro was going to be a spot for a 2 seed. They hadn't named the 2 seed yet, but Greenville. And 7 Michigan State came up. I'm like, oh, make us that 10 against Michigan State.
Yeah.
I would take that because this is probably Duke. So, like, if I could have been anywhere else, I would be fine with Marquette being a 10 in Greenville paired with Michigan State with a potential next second round matchup against Duke. Like, if I could have flopped anywhere to maybe feel better about getting one or maybe even an upset second round win, that's where I would have rather been.
Yeah, I think that was my number one destination, right? Like, if we could trade Davidson for their 10 spot and would give them cash considerations, right? Justin Lewis's NIL for cheeseburgers or something.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe if Davidson would have won their championship game, maybe they would have moved up to a 9.
Yeah,
I don't know if I don't know if that would have been that much movement that at the 11th hour, but who knows? Maybe they would have.
Right, but I mean that is the perfect slot. The only other one I would have put them again if Marquette could have drifted back to a 10 seed, which I mean, I guess maybe we should have lost to St. John's, tank for 10. But I would have gone to the 10 seed against USC with Auburn as the 2 behind it. Not because I thought we could beat Auburn, but I think we can beat USC. I think USC is a bit of a paper tiger, and our Auburn just doesn't win outside of its home arena. So, you know, there is some odds there. So I think Marquette's got slotted probably where they deserved. But in a weird way, if they had fallen a little lower, even the 10 seed against Ohio State, right, against the number 7 Ohio State, I would have taken that too.
The only
go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't have happened because that's paired with Nova, but yes.
Right. The only seven seed I would not want to have been the 10 seed for is in our own bracket. I would not want to have had anything to do with Murray State. Just, yep. You know, ghosts of Ja Morant and all.
And Murray State is 30-2 and a really good rebounding team. So
yes.
I don't think they're going to beat Kentucky, but I think Murray State's going to frustrate Kentucky. I got them beating San Francisco, but
yes,
Murray State Kentucky might be closer than Kentucky fans want it to be.
Yeah, that's probably true. But I mean, it's interesting. I just, you know, and this is what happens, right? Like you, for a moment, I remember thinking when I watched the bracket unveil, like I celebrated. Yes, we were here because you know I jokingly in our thread was like Marquette made it, right? Right? Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, a touch of nerves there before they got revealed. And I celebrated them being there and told my daughter with her poopy pants to wait 1 minute. but then there was a moment of, oh, man, why can't we have a game that we can really win? Like that, you know, that we felt really good about being able to win. And then it was one of these like, well, dummy, because you didn't win enough games in the regular season.
Right, Marquette did not earn that opportunity. That's
right.
That's the bottom line. You got to play better down the stretch, and Marquette didn't. We'll probably maybe do a little more harsher analysis of that in the post-mortem for the season, whenever that is. But as for now, I'm just going to try to be positive for one more week. And yeah. It's very likely going to end this week at some point, and then we'll probably do a post-mortem pod afterwards. So. I'll say this, we still got a little pod to go here, but if Marquette wins, I don't know how we're going to do it, but we will try to squeeze in a very quick reaction anticipation pod on Friday for you and try to get that out to you. Looking ahead to what I assume would be a Baylor game, barring one of the biggest upsets in tournament history. But if they lose, we'll probably just let it marinate for the weekend and get back to you Monday, Tuesday next week. So
yeah,
that's the plan.
If it's any consolation, I happen to be on CBS Sports, and they've got brackets based on the experts. Jerry Palm has Marquette beating North Carolina. Nobody else does, but Jerry Palm does.
I think Seth Davis and Clark Kellogg had them beating Baylor.
I don't remember hearing that. That must have been when I was changing a diaper.
Yeah, must have been so. I swear I saw somebody say that, but I think they both said they had Baylor losing early. I don't know. Forget if they said losing North Carolina or Marquette, but I want to say at least one of them had that upset. I am not going to be nearly that bold.
I also want to point out that Dennis Dodd, whoever he is, has St. Mary's beating UCLA, then beating Baylor, well, and then I guess losing to Purdue. I suppose that way could happen, but oh my sweet Christmas, I just don't believe that.
But there's always one bracket. There's always one region that is just chaotic, right?
Yes.
This, who knows? This thing's so unpredictable. But for the most part, a lot of top teams do get to the Elite Eight. But there's always like one bracket where it's like, a six playing a nine to go to the Final Four or something like that. Or, you know,
right.
something just totally outrageous. As we're talking this on about this on Sunday night, Phil, I haven't filled out my bracket. So the thing is, looking at the bracket as a whole, there isn't one team or two teams that I feel so great about that they are my national title favorites, or
right.
I'm definitely picking them to get to the Final Four. As opposed to last year, when anything other than Gonzaga-Baylor would have been a disappointment to me. And we got that. Now, that game turned out to be not that good, but that was the matchup everybody wanted. But I could be talked into like 40 different combinations for the national championship game.
Yeah, oh, I agree. Well, and I think this is in part like some of the positive that is NIL and transfer portal and all that stuff, right? Like there's a lot of teams that are balanced, and I think there's more parity this year than other years. I think it's going to be really interesting. I think the other thing I will say, and again, this is more on the negative side, I'm a little worried about the Big East generally in terms of how they're going to perform, right? Like I'm not saying that they're going to go to Big Ten levels of incompetence, but I think Villanova is not a very deep team. So yes, they're a two seed, but like, I don't, I worry about them.
Well,
I'm 100%
with you there. Cause I mean, Marquette only got, or the Big East only got six in, first of all, cause Xavier collapsed down the stretch and they were one of the first teams out, then like half of Marquette, or I keep saying Marquette, half of the Big East teams are in that
8-9 games. So they're playing
8-9 games.
Yep.
So none of them are going to be expected to advance to the next weekend. And then one of the teams that is not on the 8-9 line is Providence, a team who I guarantee you is going to be a very popular upset pick,
yep,
as people are trying to pick teams to go down early. UConn is in the always dangerous 5-12 against a New Mexico State team that is good and capable. And yeah, I'm with you on Nova. You're like, they're good and they have enough to get to the Final Four. I just wonder if they're like explosive enough on offense, or are they just going to like grind it out all the way to the Final Four, and could they beat Arizona? I think if Villanova got to the Elite Eight, that would be a heck of a season for them. I'm with you that I could see like a meltdown type LOL look at the Big East kind of scenario. There's always like at least one league where everyone points and laughs, say, oh, look how crappy you guys did. A lot [S2] Right. [S1] Of times it's been the Pac-12 lately that's been on the receiving end of those jokes. But I could also envision a scenario where the Big East has a rough go of it the first weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really care for it because, you know, and again, like we're facing a lot of one seeds. So, you know, I don't expect Seton Hall is going to be able to beat Arizona even without Chris, right? Like, yeah.
I'm not sure they're beating TCU, to be honest.
Well, yeah, to be fair, you're right. So, I mean, the bracket's going to be interesting. I am super, regardless of the results, even if Marquette loses, like, I'm just excited to have, like, full-throated NCAA March Madness back, right? Like, last year was a ton of fun, but there weren't crowds, really. You know, and this year having crowds back in the stadium, exciting games. And to your point, there's either going to be a Thursday or a Friday where things are just bonkers, right? Like it's either going to be Thursday, things go pretty chalky and everyone's kind of like, oh, okay, well, maybe this is the year where everything's just parity. And then, you know, and the committee got the seating right or and the bracketing right or whatever. And then all of a sudden Friday, everyone's lighting their hair on fire. Like, oh my God, can you believe this? Right. Or the reverse. Yep. It's going to be one of the two. Maybe both days will be bonkers, but you know, it's going to be a heck of a tournament. I'll say that at least.
Yeah. I'm very much excited to experience some of it in person and then just watch all the games all day long on Friday, and we'll see what happens the rest of the weekend. But yeah, I'm with you. The tournament was great to have back last year, but I want it back with fans. I want it jam-packed arenas, just those hold your breath moments late in the games when it's just, you know, fever pitch. You just love it. I mean, this tournament delivers every year, right?
Yes.
Like I can't remember a time in my life where I said, well, that was a crappy tournament.
Right.
Like
right.
that was boring. Like maybe we had that one year where that we had a lousy championship between Butler and UConn.
Yeah.
But it was still a great tournament. Like,
right.
It was still an amazing
tournament. I mean,
you
might have one the national championship game might be lame, but the elite run up is virtually impossible to not have
fun. This week is always awesome.
Yes. Yes.
Like this Guaranteed. Week the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I cannot remember a time where I hated this week. Like, and like this may be like an unpopular thing, but like I like upsets. I just don't like too many, right? Like I love it like when the teams I hate get exposed, like when the frauds get knocked out, or maybe a shocker here or there. But in the end, like if my team is not winning the national title, I do want the big boys at the Final Four. Like I want to see like the Titans battle it out for the national title. Like I want to see future NBA players play at the Final Four. Like I don't like seeing a 7 seed play a 6 for the national title. Like I don't like that. So I love upsets. I pull for upsets. I don't pull for an upset in every game is what
right.
I'm saying.
Right. You want chaos, but organized chaos.
I want my chaos.
Right. Now, speaking of chaos, one thing I have noticed, so for the record, Wisconsin is playing in Milwaukee at the Fiserv Forum as
everybody brush your teeth with Colgate this week.
Yes. Well, on that note, I have had people email me. I have seen mentions on Twitter, either at Home Apparel or the Colgate bookstore. There seems to be an awful lot of merchandise being purchased in the 414 area code. And I just got to say, I love it. There seems to be a contingent of Marquette fans that have tickets to that game on Friday. It's a Friday game for Wisconsin. And I think there's going to be more quote-unquote Colgate fans there than you anticipate.
You guys make me so proud. I'm just so proud of all of you. So represent Colgate. How many people even know where Colgate is?
I don't. I probably
the answer is zero? Hamilton, New York. Oh, Hamilton, New York.
That seems right.
Is the answer.
That's right. Okay. So, cool.
Any quick bracket predictions before we get out of here, Phil? Give me a final – I think I haven't even filled it out yet. So,
I haven't filled mine out either, and I have to prepare for my Calcutta bracket on Tuesday evening.
Yeah. So just like – I will say just like a quick glance through it. I think Kansas has the most favorable road of all the one seeds. So I think I will probably have Kansas in the Final Four. I will almost certainly have Kentucky in the Final Four. Yeah, I like Kentucky's bracket too because their one seed is Baylor, where they would probably get either Baylor or UCLA. Because Kentucky's got enough. Because Purdue worries me because their defense, that's been the knock on Purdue all year.
Mm-hmm. And they're the Big Ten. I'm rooting for the Big Ten to choke again.
Yeah. The thing I'm probably going to go back and forth with all week is who do I trust in the West? Like Gonzaga, every time I trust them, they let me down. And then
you can't pick Duke. Like, no way.
The thing is, like, I can't pick Duke to win the national title. I can't do that. But the thing is, like, I think Texas Tech would be really tough against Duke. Like, but am I going to pick Texas Tech to go to the Final Four? I don't know if I am. I may just have to go with Gonzaga by default, but not pick them to win at all. Mm. I might have to take Gonzaga out of the West. All right, so I'm going to talk myself into Kansas, Kentucky, Gonzaga.
So far, I'm on the same page. Those would be my three. I've got my team in the South locked. I know exactly who I've got going to the Final Four.
Even though I poo-pooed them a little earlier, I think I may go with Nova.
Mm. I see. I'm going to go with Tennessee.
Okay, Tennessee's a good pick.
I think Tennessee got underseeded, overseeded, whatever.
I think so too.
Yeah, I think they should have gotten Duke's 2 seed. And I think Tennessee's on a mission, and you know, nothing more hilarious than former Texas coaches going on long runs with new teams, right? Like Marquette and Tennessee can both go deep in this tournament and really show Texas what good coaching looks like.
And now, see, the question is, if given those teams I just gave you, who am I going to pick to win it all?
God, I hate to say I feel like Kentucky.
I'm scared it's a Kentucky year. Like, they're just, like, a team that no one – like, not many people have picked to win it all year, but, like, has been good all year. But it may be a Kentucky year. Could this be a Kansas year? I don't know. I'm going to go back and forth all that all week. So I'm leaning Kentucky as my national title pick right now. All right, last pick, the important pick, Phil. Are we doing a podcast on Friday or not?
Are you going to be undrunk at that point?
Well, I'll be fine by Friday morning.
I think we should. I think the people demand it.
Yeah. So that would mean Marquette wins.
Right.
So I let's just be positive for a week. If we're wrong, who cares? This is the Marquette Basketball Podcast. I'm going to say Marquette pulls it off because surprising things happen. And I would love it. It would be freaking awesome. So go Marquette. Let's win that one. And then we'll worry about Baylor after that. So
yeah, we'll worry about Baylor another time, like maybe next year.
Yeah. Hey, go Norfolk State, by the way.
Please.
Hey, so before we get out of here, I saved this for the end because I'm assuming the overwhelming majority of you will not be coming down to Texas. But if you are, first of all, hit me up. You know, you can find me on Twitter. DMs are open. Let me know if you're going to be in town. Meet me up at the arena. We'll probably have a pregame somewhere in that general vicinity around Dickey's Arena. Just a few. I thought since I live down here, I have for almost 10 years now, I'm not going to be the best tour guide for Fort Worth, to be honest with you, but just give you an idea of some things to look around, think about, things to look for if you're looking for stuff to do or places to hit up while you're in Fort Worth. So Dickey's Arena, like the area like immediately around Dickey's Arena, like if you're talking about like walking across the street or walking like 2 or 3 blocks, not much there. Really not much there. But like now, to be honest, I have not walked this myself. I've just looked on a map. But West 7th Street is an area about a mile and change north of Dickey's Arena. According to the map, you can walk it. It looks like it would be about a 20-minute walk. So it depends on how you feel about walking. Some people, that's fine. No problem. I can walk 20 minutes. Some people like, oh, God, 20-minute walk. Call an Uber. But right. Either way, it would be it's either an ambitious walk or a very short Uber cab ride, whatever. West 7th has got a lot of bars. It's got a lot of restaurants. Great place to hang out before the game, after the game. It's kind of like the young adult crowd on the weekends. Places like Social House is a great bar and pub there. There's a World of Beer there, which is what it sounds like. It's just a place with tons of beers. Trinity College Pub, I'm guessing, is going to be really hopping that weekend because it's Irish
pub day themed. That day will be St. Patrick's Day.
Because it is St. Patrick's Day proper that day. I know most areas, including Dallas-Fort Worth, Dallas had their big St. Patrick's Day parade this past Saturday, which I assume most cities did. But that will be St. Patrick's Day, so I'm assuming Trinity College Pub will have a pretty cool St. Patrick's Day deal. Rodeo Goat is a great burger joint down there in West 7th. Gloria's is awesome. Latin food, Tex-Mex, really good. Velvet Tacos, like more like late night, like countertop taco food, but that's a pretty good place if you're like out there really late. So those are some places I would recommend around West 7th. Again, that's very short, but maybe depending on how you feel about walking, just maybe slightly above walking distance from Dickies. Also very close to Dickies Arena, but in the other direction, Papado's Papacitos. That's a seafood place and a Tex-Mex place. Nice, real sit-down restaurants, good places to get something to eat. Kind of a touristy place that's a little further north. Now, that's the Stockyards. So
I was going to ask about the Stockyards.
So, like, if you're looking for, like, stereotypical Texas, like, you want country music, you want people in cowboy hats, maybe even seeing somebody come up to the bar on a horse, Stockyards, that's where you want to be. A lot of, like, cowboy bars, right? You know, country music, that line dance and all that kind of stuff. That's where Stockyards is. Now, there's a great Mexican place there called Joe T. Garcia's. Now, if you go there, be prepared to wait, because there's usually a line, like, around the block, but if there's a line around the block, you know it's good. The upside at Joe T's, if you're waiting in line, is you can go up to the bar, get a pitcher of margaritas, bring it back in line with you and your friends, and you can just drink margaritas until it's your time to get to the front of the line.
Oh, sweet Lord.
Yeah, so you could be pretty lit by the time you actually sit down. But Joe T's, like, it's like the atmosphere. The food is great, don't get me wrong, but it's like the atmosphere. It's just like a beautiful, like, half of outdoors, like semi-outdoors kind of setting for Tex-Mex food, and it's awesome. So Joe T's, you probably wouldn't have time to do that on game day unless you're only going to one game. Like if you go to the Marquette session and you're not going to the night session, Joe T's would be pretty awesome after the game. Or if you're just looking for something to do on Friday, Joe T's is great. Now, elsewhere in Fort Worth, Sundance Square, that's a little further away, just a couple miles away from Dickies Arena. Definitely not walkable, but just a couple miles away. That's kind of that's what I would call downtown Fort Worth. Nice places to walk around, lots of good restaurants. Some restaurants that are probably, like, national, like places you've seen elsewhere. Like, do you guys have Mi Cocina up there in Wisconsin?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so there's Mi Cocina there. Texas Day Brazil is there. There's a really good brunch place there called Yolk. I've eaten there. If you want to treat yourself to a steak, Riata Steakhouse in Sundance Square is awesome. But Sundance Square is also just a good place if you're just the type who just likes to sit outside, drink a coffee, maybe walk around downtown, read a book. Sundance Square is nice for that. Also, another thing I love about Fort Worth, for the most part, a lot of free parking, as opposed to Dallas, where you're paying through the nose to park anywhere. So after business hours and on weekends, lots of free parking. May not be that way for the weekend of the tournament, I should say. So maybe they may charge you a little more than that, especially around West 7th, but they do validate parking around West 7th. So if you're hitting one of the bars, you may get at least a few hours free if you're parking
there.
So when
you wrap up your third margaritas or pitcher of margaritas at Joe T's, you can – excuse me, could you stamp this for me?
Well, Joe T's is up there in the Stockyards. It's, like, wide open, so there's, like, a lot of, like, outdoor parking. But, like, West 7th is a little more congested, so they have garages and stuff. So there's places to park there. Fast food countertop stuff. So if maybe you don't want to sit down and eat, like, at a fancy restaurant or nicer restaurant, you just want fast food or countertop stuff. Whataburger is, of course, bigger. Do you guys have Whataburger in Wisconsin?
We do not, nor do we have In-N-Out Burger.
So we have both. So we have Whataburger and In-N-Out. Texan, I am obligated to tell you I prefer Whataburger. In-N-Out is fine. I'm just not a big fan of In-N-Out's fries. I think they're bland. But In-N-Out's fine. Whataburger is great. So if you want a fast food burger, get Whataburger before you get out of Texas. Do you guys say Raisin Cane's? I think maybe a couple spots.
Yeah, a couple of them. They just started coming in.
Okay, so Raisin Cane's, chicken fingers, again, fast food. It's really good. Torchy's Tacos. You guys don't have those up there,
no,
right?
No, we do not. Nope.
So Torchy's, that's countertop Tex-Mex place. Really good. Maybe a little pricey when you're looking like per taco. It's like, man, it's that much for one taco. But get a couple tacos, get some queso, get some beers. Torchy's Tacos is pretty good. Fuzzy's is like maybe a little cheaper version of that, a little more casual. There's one on TCU's campus, which is just a couple miles west of Dickey's. So TCU's campus, if you're the type who likes to just check out college campuses and walk around, TCU's campus is pretty close to Dickey's. So you can go and check that out and you can hit up Fuzzy's. Pretty good taco joint. But I, again, Torchy's tastes better. Fuzzy's a little cheaper if you just want cheap beers and tacos. Plus, Fuzzy's also has really good shrimp tacos. So if you, my fellow practicing Catholics out there, if you need that for Friday, Fuzzy's got you covered on fish and shrimp tacos. So there's that. My go-to sports bar in the area is Pluckers. I love, if you just want wings and beer, Pluckers is awesome. There's several of those around the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And now I know many of you want to know this, breweries.
Yes, beer. What brewery is the best, and is there a go-to beer of the Fort Worth area?
Okay, so first of all, there are just, the craft beer scene in Dallas-Fort Worth is incredible. There's just so many. Like, I know that you guys have a ton in Wisconsin, so maybe it wouldn't like amaze you because you have plenty up there too. But there's so many. I wouldn't say there's one that dominates the market. Now there's Fort Worth and there's Dallas. So on the Fort Worth side, which is where you guys are all going to be, RAR is the proper one. That's RAHR. RAR. That's in Fort Worth. That's not far from TCU. They got a lot of go-tos. I like their Texas Red and their Ugly Pug. Those are good beers. Maple Branch, I haven't been to, but I've heard it's very good. That's also in Fort Worth, like fruit or whatever, sours. Hop Fusion's where you want to check out. Like, they have, I like to call them like the mad scientist of beer. They have like all kinds of experimental type flavors. So if you want something like different, Hop Fusion in Fort Worth is a different kind of brewery. Now, one to keep an eye on is a Martin House, which is just a little north of downtown Fort Worth. And the best thing about Martin House, next door to a Topgolf. So you could park at one and go to the other if you want to just, if you're looking for something to do on that Friday, you can go to Martin House Brewing, get your beers, walk over to Topgolf, play Topgolf, or if like there's like a 3-hour wait at Topgolf, you know, go to Topgolf first, put your name in, go over to Martin House, get some beers, walk back. Wouldn't be a bad way to spend a Friday, just saying. So Martin House and Topgolf are right next to each other. There aren't like any particular beers at Martin House that are among my favorite, but it's a brewery. You'll find something you like. Panther Island is one more in the Fort Worth area. They got like Panther Island Pavilion. It's kind of a cool place to hang out. That's Fort Worth as well. If you're venturing over to Dallas, that's something I would, if you're going to do that, do it on Friday, of course, on the day off. But, you know, obviously it'd take about an hour to get over there. But if you want to see Dallas, you can go over there. They got Deep Ellum is probably the most popular one. The Dallas Blonde is very popular. Revolver is one. Now, Revolver has one of my favorite beers in the entire Dallas-Fort Worth area. So if you're at a bar and you can get a Revolver Blood and Honey, that's probably my favorite.
Yes, I will second that. Those are outstanding.
So, and they're not just only available in Dallas, to be clear. Any bar in Dallas-Fort Worth area is probably going to have a Blood and Honey. So any bar with like a decent bar or a beer menu is going to have Blood and Honey. I would recommend that one. Community is another popular one in Dallas. Bitter Sisters is kind of funny. It's like owned by a bunch of women. They have like some funny names for some of their beers. That's kind of it's a smaller place, but it's pretty cool. You know, the thing about Dallas, if you're looking for like touristy stuff to do, there's not like anything that it's like a must see in Dallas, which is, you know, it's great if you live here because it's not like you're overwhelmed with tourists. But if you are a tourist and you're looking for something touristy to do, like, there's not, like, anything that I would say is, like, a must-see in Dallas, like, you have to go to. But if you're going all the way over to Dallas, they have the Sixth Floor Museum, which is, of course, about the Kennedy assassination. Of course, JFK was assassinated in Dallas, so they have the Sixth Floor Museum. Reunion Tower, which you've ever seen this Dallas skyline. It's, like, that giant green-looking thing. And so it's got, like, a revolving, you know, top floor, so you can get a panoramic view of the city up there. It's kind of tourist. That's maybe kind of touristy. So Reunion Tower is kind of cool. They have some nice restaurants up there. The Bush Museum at SMU, the George W. Bush Presidential Library, regardless what you think of him as a president. If you're a historical buff, Bush Museum's at SMU. The Perot Museum of Natural History, of you know, nature and science. If you got kids, I've never been to the Perot Museum, but I've heard it's very fun for kids. So if you're if you got kids and you're looking for something to keep them occupied on Friday, check out the Perot Museum. Look into tickets for that. That's kind of cool. Or if you just want to be outside on Friday or Friday, Saturday, Dallas Arboretum is nice. Just a very nice outdoor space, you know, flowers and, you know, good place to hang out, have a picnic or whatever, if that's something you want to do, Dallas Arboretum. But again, you'd be driving from Fort Worth to Dallas if you want to do that. So the last thing I will warn you all, so if you've ever been to Minneapolis, you know how 35 splits and there's 35W and 35E, like one goes through St. Paul, one goes through Minneapolis. Same thing down here in Dallas. Mm-hmm. There's 35W and 35E. 35E goes through Dallas, 35W goes through Fort Worth. 35W between downtown Fort Worth and the Texas Motor Speedway, which is on the northwest side of the Metroplex, is an absolute nightmare for traffic. There's so much construction. But the good news is, for most of you, you're probably flying into Dallas, Fort Worth, or DFW Airport, or Dallas Love Field. Either way, you would not have to get on 35W to get to downtown Fort Worth. The only reason you would even get on 35W would be A, if you're coming to my house, or B, if you are going to Texas Motor Speedway, which I can't imagine why anybody would, unless you are really itching to go to the IndyCar race, which is, yes, the same weekend as the tournament.
Holy crap.
There is an IndyCar race at Texas Motor Speedway next weekend. So the traffic around 35W and 114 is going to be awful. So if you're driving down, like if you're someone who's coming from like Kansas City or Oklahoma, or maybe if you're really bold, you're driving all the way from Milwaukee, I assure you the last hour of your drive will be terrible. I promise you.
Just prepare.
Just be ready, because it is rough. The stretch from Texas Motor Speedway to downtown Fort Worth. But again, for most of you, I assume you're flying in, you probably will not have to get on 35W very much at all, at least maybe just to get out of downtown to maybe get on one of the highways that would get you back towards your hotel or to get back towards the airport. So, so that's my exhaustive list of things to do in Fort Worth. Did I leave anything out?
No, I think you covered it. I mean, the only other thing is Six Flags.
I guess Six Flags. I don't know if Six Flags is open. There's a lot of good barbecue places. One of my favorites is not near downtown Fort Worth, though. It's Hard Eight. There is one very close to DFW Airport, so maybe something to get either on the way in or on the way out. Hard Eight is an awesome barbecue, but there's a ton of barbecue places downtown Fort Worth. Again, I'm probably not the best tour guide as far as barbecue places in DFW area, but there's a ton, so... people always ask me, what's the best barbecue place? I always tell them, get Tex-Mex here. Tex-Mex here is awesome. Now, the barbecue's good, too. Don't get me wrong, but don't sleep on the Tex-Mex.
That's not...
Right. I mean, the barbecue's great. But the thing is, there are a ton of great barbecue places. But just don't think barbecue is like the only cuisine that's good here. Tex-Mex is awesome. Tex-Mex and barbecue, both equally as good in this greater area. So, that's it.
Nice.
So that is my exhaustive list of things to do in Fort Worth.
Listen, if you're listening to this podcast and you're going to Fort Worth and you still can't find anything to do, eat, or drink, like, I don't know what to do for you, man.
Yeah. Again, I think the popular hangout pre- and post-game is going to be West 7th. So when you look on the map and you see West 7th Street, that's going to be, I'm going to guess, that's going to be the area that's going to be really hopping with a lot of people pre- and post-game. So that would be my guess. So, all right, that's it. I guess that's...
Nice. Is that where you're going to be found, Joe?
Very, very likely, yes. I haven't planned it out exactly, but I'm thinking... So Marquette, again, I have tickets to all the games in Fort Worth. So the first game is at 1 Central, but that's Norfolk State and Baylor, so if I'm late to that, I probably won't shed any tears. But what I might do is, I may get like a meal and a beer somewhere West 7th area, and then head over to Norfolk State Baylor, and then of course Marquette Carolina would be the game immediately after that. And then, depending on if I'm very happy or very sad, you can probably find me somewhere else in the general area after that. And then I will be at the night games, either very depressed or just absolutely giddy and looking forward to a game against Baylor. So, but yeah, again.
Oh, well, that one other question: does the arena have alcohol?
Oh yeah! Oh hell yeah! Oh yeah.
Okay.
This is not a college arena. You can get your drink on. You'll be paying for it, but You can get your drink on at Dickies Arena for sure.
Well, listen, we're used to the Pfizer form. You haven't yet been to a game here, but a Coors Light, do you want to guess how much a 16-ounce Coors Light costs at the Pfizer Forum?
$12.
$13. Ooh.
Yeah. I think it's like I said, the only time I've been to Dickies Arena was I was covering high school games, so I did not buy a beer in those situations. But right. I'm guessing the beers are not cheap. So if you want cheaper beers, I would suggest pre-gaming on West 7th. There are like a couple bars like close to Dickies, but they don't look like that great from the outside. I haven't been in them, but I'm guessing those aren't going to be great hangouts. Just my guess. Enjoy. Again, if you're going, hit me up on Twitter. Just let me know. Say, hey, I'm going to be in town. Where are you going to be? And I'll probably, I don't know if I'll post on Twitter where I'm going to be, but maybe if I like you, I'll.
That feels a little bit dangerous.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's some people out there who really want to kick my ass. I don't know.
Yeah.
I got to be careful.
I mean, you have a very punchable face, Joe.
I do. I've been told that many times. But again. If you're a person I interact with a lot on Twitter, you know who you are. Just hit me up on the tweets, slide in the DM, say, hey, man, I'll be in Fort Worth. Where are you going to be? I'll let you know. So, looking forward to seeing you guys. Please get down here if you can. Hopefully there are two games to watch, but we'll see. Hey, hit me up on Twitter again. I am JoeMcCann3 on Twitter. Phil is M-triple-O-F-23. At CrackSidewalks is the team handle. Go to CrackSidewalks.com. We post the podcast on there. You can leave your comments on CrackSidewalks.com. We also please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We got the Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. Let's go, Marquette, Phil. Let's be positive for one more week, and then we can, you know, eat Arby's next week if we have to.
Yeah, absolutely. Arby's can hold for a week. In fact, it gets quote-unquote better if you leave it around for a week. So let's just get a victory. And then, you know, we'll see where the day takes us.
Go Marquette.
Probably West 7th.
See y'all on West 7th. Seashells and balloons, everybody.